Chapter 6. They were running to the westward, inside the reef, with the wind astern. The tanks had been filled, the ice stowed, and below one watch was picking and cleaning chickens, the other was cleaning weapons. The canvas that shielded the flying bridge to waist height was laced on, and the two long boards that announced in 12-inch block letters the scientific mission of the boat were in place. Looking over the side, watching the depth of water, Thomas Hudson saw the patches of chicken feathers floating out onto the following sea. "Take her in just as close as we can without hitting any of those sandbars," he told Ada. "You know this coast."
"I know it's no good," Ada said. "Where are we going to anchor?"
"I want to check up at the head of Cayo Cruz."
"We can't check there, but I don't think it will be much use. You don't think they would stay there, do you?"
"No, but there might be fishermen in there who would have seen them, or charcoal burners."
"I wish this wind would fail," Ada said. "I'd like to have a couple of days of flat calm."
"It's squally over Romano."
"I know, but this wind blows through here like through a pass in the mountains. We'll never catch them if this wind keeps up."
"We've been right so far," Thomas Hudson said, "and maybe we'll get some luck. They could have taken Lobos and used the radio there to call up that other sub to take them off."
"That shows they didn't know the other sub was there."
"Must be. They move a lot in 10 days.
"When they want to," Ada said. "Let's stop thinking, Tom. It gives me a headache. I'd rather handle gas drums. You think, and tell me where you want me to steer."
"Just as she goes and watch for that no-good Minerva. Keep well inside of that and outside the sand spits."
"Good."
"Do you suppose she lost her radio when she got smacked?" Thomas Hudson thought. "She must have had an emergency radio that she could have used, but Peters never picked her up on the UHF after she was smacked. Still, that doesn't necessarily prove anything." "Nothing proves anything except that those two boats were seen on the course we are on 3 days ago. Did I ask him if they had their dinghies on deck? No, I forgot to. But they must have, because he said they were ordinary Bahaman turtling boats except for the shelters they had rigged with the palm branches." "How many people?" "You don't know. Any wounded? You don't know. How armed? All you know is a machine pistol. Their course? We are on it, until now." "Maybe we will find something between Cayo Cruz and Megano," he thought. "What you'll probably find is lots of willets and iguana tracks in the sand toward the waterhole. Well, it keeps your mind off things." "What things? There aren't any things anymore." "Oh, yes, there are. There is the ship, and the people on her, and the sea, and the bastards you are hunting. Afterwards you will see your animals and go into town and get drunk as you can and your ashes dragged, and then get ready to go out and do it again. Maybe this time you will get these characters. You did not destroy their undersea boat, but you were faintly instrumental in its destruction. If you can round up the crew, it will be extremely useful." "Then why don't you care about anything?" he asked himself. "Why don't you think of them as murderers and have the righteous feelings that you should have? Why do you just pound and pound on after it like a riderless horse that is still in the race?" "Because we are all murderers," he told himself. "We all are on both sides if we're any good, and no good will come of any of it. But you have to do it." "Sure," he said, "but I don't have to be proud of it. I only have to do it well. I didn't hire out to like it." "You did not even hire out," he told himself. "That makes it even worse." "Let me take her, Ada," he said. Ada gave him the wheel. "Keep a good lookout to starboard, but don't let the sun blind you."
"I'll get my glasses. Look, Tom, why don't you let me steer and get a good 4-mile lookout up here? You're tired, and you didn't rest at all at the quay."
"We don't need a 4-man lookout in here. Later on we will."
"But you're tired."
"I'm not sleepy. Look, if they run nights along here close into shore, they are going to get into trouble. Then they will have to lay up to make repairs, and we will find them."
"That's no reason for you never to rest, Tom."
"I'm not doing it to show off," Thomas Hudson said.
"No one has ever thought so."
"How do you feel about these bastards?"
"Only that we will catch them and kill what is necessary and bring the others in."
"What about the massacre?"
"I don't say that we would have done the same thing, but they thought it was necessary. They did not do it for pleasure,
Hara said. And their dead man?
Henry has wanted to kill Peter several times. I have wanted to kill him myself sometimes.
Yes, Thomas Hudson agreed. It is not an uncommon feeling.
I don't think of any of these things, and so I don't worry. Why don't you not worry and read when you relax the way you always did?
I'm going to sleep tonight. After we anchor, I'll read and then sleep. We've gained 4 days on them, though it does not show. Now we must search carefully.
We will get them or we will drive them into other people's hands, Hara said. What difference does it make? We have our pride, but we have another pride. People know nothing of.
That is what I had forgotten, Thomas Hudson said.
It is a pride without vanity,
Hara continued.
Failure is his brother, and shit is his sister, and death is his wife.
Must be a big pride.
It is, Hara said. You must not forget it, Tom. You must not destroy yourself. Everyone in the ship has a pride, including Peters, although I do not like Peters.
Thanks for telling me, Thomas Hudson said. I feel fuck all discouraged about things sometimes.
Tom, Hara said, all a man has is his pride. Sometimes you have it so much it is a sin. We have all done things for pride that we knew were impossible. We didn't care. But a man must implement his pride with intelligence and care. Now that you have ceased to be careful of yourself, I must ask you to be, please, for us and for the ship.
Who is us?
All of us.
Okay, Thomas Hudson said. Ask for your dark glasses.
Don't. Please understand.
I understand. Thanks very much. I'll eat a hearty supper and sleep like a child. Hara did not think it was funny. And he always thought funny things were funny.
You try it, Tom, he said.
Chapter 7. They anchored in the lee of Cayo Cruz, in the sandy bight between the two keys. We'll put out another anchor to lay here, Thomas Hudson called to his mate. I don't like this bottom. The mate shrugged his shoulders and bent down to the second anchor, and Thomas Hudson eased her ahead against the tide, watching the grass from the banks riding in by the current. He came astern until his second anchor was well dug in. The boat lay with her bow into the wind and the tide running past her. There was much wind, even in this lee, and he knew that when the tide changed, she would swing broadside to the swell. The hell with it, he said. Let her roll. But his mate had lowered the dinghy already, and they were running out a stern anchor. Thomas Hudson watched them drop the little Danforth where it would hold her into the wind when the tide came a flood. Why don't you put out a couple more, he called. Then maybe we could sell her for a goddamn spider. The mate grinned at him. Get the outboard on her. I'm going in.
No, Tom, his mate said. Let Ada and Willie go in. I'll take them in and another party to Megano. Do you want them to take the niños?
No, be scientists. I'm accepting a lot of handling, he thought. That must mean I really do need some rest. The thing is, I'm neither tired nor sleepy. Antonio, he said.
Yes,
said his mate. I'll take the air mattress and two cushions and a big drink.
What kind of drink?
Gin and coconut water with angostura and lime.
Domini,
his mate said, pleased that he was drinking again. Double quantity. Henry threw the air mattress up and climbed after it with a book and a magazine. You're out of the wind here, he said. Do you want me to open any of this canvas for ventilation? Since when did I rate all this? Tom, we talked of it, and we all agreed that you need some rest. You've been driving yourself past what a man can stand. You're past it now.
Shit, said Thomas Hudson.
Maybe, said Henry. I said I thought you were okay and could go quite a lot more and hold the pace, but the others were worried and they convinced me. You can deconvince me, but take it easy now, Tom. I never felt better, I just don't give a damn. That's what it's about. You won't come down off the bridge, you want to stand all the watches steering, and you don't give a damn about anything. Okay, said Thomas Hudson, I get the picture, but I still command. I didn't mean it in any bad way, truly.
Forget it, Thomas Hudson said. I'm resting. You know how to search a key, don't you?
I should.
See what there is on Megano.
That's mine. Willie and Otta have gone in already. I'm just waiting with the other party for Antonio to come back with the dinghy.
How is Peters?
He's been working hard on the big radio all afternoon. He thinks he has it fixed okay.
That would be wonderful. If I'm asleep, wake me as soon as you get back.
Yes, Tom.
Henry reached down and took something that was handed to him. It was a big glass full of ice and a rusty-colored liquid, and it was wrapped in a double thickness of paper towel held fast by a rubber band.
A double Tamini, Henry said. Drink it and read and go to sleep. You can put the glass in one of the big frag slots.
Thomas Hudson took a long sip.
I like it, he said. You used to. Everything will be fine, Tom.
Everything we can do damn well better be.
Just get a good rest.
I will. Henry went down, and Thomas Hudson heard the hum of the outboard coming in. It stopped, and there was talking, and then he heard the hum of it going away. He waited a little, listening. Then he took the drink and threw it high over the side and let the wind take it astern. He settled the glass in the hole that fitted best in the triple rack and lay face down on the rubber mattress with his two arms around it. I think they had wounded under the shelters, he thought. Of course, it could be to conceal many people, but I do not believe that. They would have come in here the first night. I should have gone ashore. I will from now on. But Otta and Henry could not be better, and Willie is very good. I must try to be very good. Try hard tonight, he told himself, and chase hard and good and with no mistakes and do not overrun them.
Chapter 8.
He felt a hand on his shoulder. It was Otta, and he said,
We got one, Tom. Willie and I.
Thomas Hudson swung down, and Otta was with him. The German lay on the stern, wrapped in a blanket. His head was on two cushions. Peters was sitting on the deck beside him with a glass of water.
Look at what you got, he said.
The German was thin, and there was a blonde beard on his chin and on his sunken cheeks. His hair was long and uncombed, and in the late afternoon light with the sun almost down, he looked like a saint.
He can't talk, Otta said. Willie and I tried him. You better keep the windward of him, too.
I smelled it coming down, Thomas Hudson said. Ask him if he wants anything, he said to Peters. The radio operator spoke to him in German, and the German looked toward him, but he did not speak nor move his head. Thomas Hudson heard the humming of the outboard motor and looked across the bight at the dinghy coming out of the sunset. It was loaded down to the waterline. He looked down at the German again. Ask him how many they are. Tell him we must know how many they are. Tell him this is important. Peters spoke to the German softly, and it seemed to Thomas Hudson almost lovingly. The German said three words with great effort.
He says nothing is important, Peters said.
Tell him he is wrong. I have to know. Ask him if he wants morphine. The German looked at Thomas Hudson kindly and said three words.
He says it doesn't hurt anymore, Peters said.
He spoke rapidly in German, and again Thomas Hudson caught the loving tone, or perhaps it was only the loving sound of the language.
Shut up, Peters, Thomas Hudson said. Translate only and exactly what I say.
Did you hear me?
Yes, sir, Peters said.
Tell him I can make him tell. Peters spoke to the German, and he turned his eyes toward Thomas Hudson. They were old eyes now, but they were in a young man's face, gone old as driftwood and nearly as gray.
Nein,
the German said slowly.
He says no, Peters translated.
Yeah, I got that part of it, Thomas Hudson said. Get him some warm soup, Willie, and bring some cognac. Peters, ask him if he wouldn't like some morphine, really, if he doesn't have to talk. Tell him we have plenty. Peters translated,
and the German looked toward Thomas Hudson and smiled a thin, northern smile. He spoke almost inaudibly to Peters.
He says thank you, but he doesn't need it, and it's better to save it.
Then he said something softly to Peters, who translated.
He says he could have used it last week.
Tell him I admire him, Thomas Hudson said. Antonio, his mate, was alongside in the dinghy with Henry and the rest of the Megano party.
Come aboard easy, Thomas Hudson said to them. Keep away from the stern. We got a kraut dying on the stern that I want to have die easy. What did you find?
Nothing, Henry said. Absolutely nothing.
Peters, Thomas Hudson said. Talk to him all you want. You might get something. I'm going forward with Ada and Willie to get a drink. Below, he said. How's your soup, Willie?
The first one I put my hands on was clam broth, Willie said. It's about hot enough.
Why didn't you give him oxtail or mulligatawny, Thomas Hudson said. They're more deadly in his condition. Where the hell is the chicken?
I didn't want to give him the chicken. That's Henry's.
Quite right, too, Henry said. Why should we coddle him?
I don't think we really are. When I ordered it, I thought some soup and a drink might help him talk, but he isn't gonna talk. Give me a gin, will you, Ada?
They made a shelter for him, Tom, and he had a good bed made from branches and plenty of water and food and a crock. They tried to make him comfortable, and they ditched sand for the drainage. There were many good tracks from the beach, and I would say they were 8 or 10, not more. Willie and I were very careful carrying him. Both his wounds are gangrenous, and the gangrene is very high toward the right thigh. Perhaps we should not have brought him, but instead have come for you and Peters to question him in his shelter. If so, it is my fault.
Did he have a weapon?
No, nor any identification.
Give me my drink, Thomas Hudson said. When would you say the branches for the shelter were cut?
No later than yesterday morning, I would say. But I could not be sure.
Did he speak at all?
No. He looked as though made of wood when he saw us with the pistols. He looked afraid of Willie once, when he saw his eye, I think. Then he smiled when we lifted him. To show he could, Willie said. Then he went away, Ada said. How long do you think will take him to die, Tom?
I don't know.
Well, let's go out and take the drinks, Henry said. I don't trust Peters.
Let's drink the clam broth up, Willie said. I'm hungry. I can heat him a can of Henry's chicken if he says it's okay.
If it will help to make him talk, Henry said. Of course.
He probably won't, Willie said. But it's kind of shitty to give him clam broth the way he is. Take him out the cognac, Henry. Maybe he really likes that, like you and me.
Don't bother him, Thomas Hudson said. He's a good kraut.
Sure, Willie said. They're all good krauts when they fold up.
He hasn't folded up, Thomas Hudson said. He's just dying.
With much style, Ada said. You getting to be a kraut lover too?
Willie asked him.
That makes you and Peters.
Shut up, Willie, Thomas Hudson said.
What's the matter with you?
Willie said to Thomas Hudson.
You're just the exhausted leader of a little group of earnest crowd lovers.
Come up forward, Willie, Thomas Hudson said. Ada, take the soup astern when it's warm. The rest of you go watch the kraut die if you want, but don't crowd him. Antonio started to follow as Thomas Hudson and Willie went forward, but Thomas Hudson shook his head at him, and the big man went back to the galley. They were in the forward cockpit, and it was almost dark. Thomas Hudson could just see Willie's face. It looked better in this light, and he was on the side of the good eye. Thomas Hudson looked at Willie, and then at his two anchor lines, and at a tree he could still see on the beach. It's a tricky sandy bottom, he thought, and he said,
All right, Willie, say the rest of it.
You, Willie said, flogging yourself to death up there because your kid is dead. Don't you know everybody's kids die?
I know it. What else?
That fucking Peters, and a fucking crowd stinking up the fantail, and what kind of ship is it where the cook is the mate?
How does he cook?
He cooks wonderful, and he knows more about small boat handling than all of us put together, including you.
Much more.
Shit, Tom, I'm not blowing my top. I got no goddamn top to blow. I'm used to doing things a different way. I like it on this ship, and I like everybody except that half-cunt Peters. Only you quit flogging yourself.
I'm not, really, Thomas Hudson said. I don't think about anything except work.
You're so noble, you ought to be stuffed and crucified,
Willie said.
Think about cunt.
We're headed toward it.
That's the way to talk.
Willie, are you okay now?
Sure, why the hell wouldn't I be? The crowd got me, I guess. They had him fixed up nice like we wouldn't fix up anybody. Or maybe we would if we had the time. But they took time. They don't know how close we are. But they got to know somebody's chasing. Everybody's after them now. But they fixed him up just as nice as anybody could be fixed in the condition he was.
Sure, Thomas Hudson said. They fixed up those people back on the quay nice, too.
Yeah,
said Willie.
Isn't that the hell of it?
Just then, Peters came in. He always held himself as a Marine, even when he was not at his best, and he was proudest of the real discipline without the formalities of discipline, which was the rule of the ship. He was the one who took the greatest advantage of it. Now he stopped, came to attention, saluted, which showed he was drunk, and said,
Sir, he's dead.
Who's dead?
The prisoner, sir.
Okay, Thomas Hudson said. Get your generator going and see if you can get Guantanamo. They ought to have something for us, he thought. Did the prisoner talk? He asked Peters.
No, sir.
Willie, he asked, how do you feel?
Fine.
Get some flash bulbs and take two. In profile of the face lying on the stern, take the blanket off and his shorts off, and take one full length lying as he is across the stern, shoot one full face of his head, and one full face lying down.
Yes, sir,
Willie said. Thomas Hudson went up on the flying bridge. He heard the motor of the generator start and saw the sudden flashes of the bulbs. ONI, up where they evaluate, won't believe we even have this much of a crowd, he thought. There isn't any proof. Somebody will claim it's a stiff they pushed out that we picked up. I should have photographed him sooner. The hell with him. Maybe we will get the others tomorrow. Ada came up.
Tom, who do you want to have take him ashore and bury him?
Who's worked the least today?
Everybody has worked hard. I'll take Gillian and we will do it. We can bury him in the sand just above high water.
Maybe a little higher.
I'll send Willie up and you can tell him how you want the board lettered. I have a board from my box in stores.
Send Willie up.
Do we sew him up?
No, just wrap him in his own blanket. Send Willie up.
What was it that you wanted?
Willie asked. Letter the board, unknown German sailor, and put the date underneath.
Okay, Tom. Do you want me to go in with the burial detail?
No. Ada and Jill are going in. Letter the board and take it easy and have a drink.
As soon as Peters gets Guantanamo, I'll send it up. Don't you want to come down?
No, I'm taking it easy up here.
What's it like on the bridge of a big ship like this, full of responsibility and horse shit?
Just about the same as lettering that board. When the signal came from Guantanamo, it read, decoded, "Continue searching carefully westward." That's us, said Thomas Hudson to himself. He lay down and was asleep immediately, and Henry covered him with a light blanket. Chapter 9. An hour before daylight, he was below and had checked his glass. It was 4/10 lower, and he woke his mate and showed it to him. The mate looked at him and nodded.
You saw the squalls over Romano yesterday,
he whispered.
She was going into the south.
Make me some tea, will you please? Thomas Hudson asked.
I have some cold in a bottle on the ice.
He went astern and found a mop and a bucket and scrubbed the deck of the stern. It had been scrubbed before, but he scrubbed it again and rinsed the mop. Then he took his bottle of cold tea up on the flying bridge and waited for it to get light. Before it was light, his mate got in the stern anchor and then with Ada brought in the starboard anchor, and they and Gil hoisted the dinghy aboard. Then his mate pumped the bilges and checked his motors. He put his head up and said,
Anytime.
Why did she make that much water?
Just a stuffing box. I tightened it a little. But I'd rather she made a little water than run hot.
All right. Send up Ara and Henry. We'll get going. They got in the anchor, and he turned to Ara. Show me the tree again. Ara pointed it out just above the line of beach they were leaving, and Thomas Hudson made a small penciled cross on the chart. Peters never did get Guantanamo again?
No, he burned out once more.
Well, we are behind them, and they have other people ahead of them, and we've got orders.
Do you think the wind will really go into the south, Tom?
Henry asked. The glass shows it will. We can tell better when it starts to get up.
It fell off to almost nothing about 4 o'clock.
Did the sandflies hit you?
Only at daylight.
You might as well go down and flit them all out. There's no sense our carrying them around with us. It was a lovely day, and looking back at the bight where they had anchored, and at the beach and the scrub trees of Cayo Cruz that they both knew so well, Thomas Hudson and Ara saw the high, piled clouds over the land. Cayo Romano rose so that it was like the mainland, and the clouds were high above it with their promise of south wind or calm and land squalls.
What would you think if you were a German, Ara? Thomas Hudson asked. What would you think if you saw and knew that you were going to lose your wind?
I try to get inside, Ara said. I think that's what I do.
You'd need a guide for inside.
I get me a guide, Ara said.
Where would you get him?
From fishermen up at Anton or inside the Romano. Or at Coco. There must be fishermen salting fish along there now. There might even be a live well boat at Anton.
We'll try Anton, Thomas Hudson said. It's nice to wake up in the morning and steer with the sun behind you.
If you always steer with the sun behind you and on a day like this, what a place the ocean would be.
The day was like true summer, and in the morning the squalls had not yet built. The day was all gentle promise, and the sea lay smooth and clear. They could see bottom clearly until they ran out of soundings, and then far out and just where it should be was the Minerva with the sea breaking restfully on its coral rocks. It was the swell that was left from the 2 months of unremitting heavy trade wind, but it broke gently and kindly and with a passive regularity. It is as though she were saying, we are all friends now, and there will never be any trouble nor any wildness again, Thomas Hudson thought. Why is she so dishonest? A river can be treacherous and cruel and kind and friendly. A stream can be completely friendly, and you can trust it all your life if you do not abuse it. But the ocean always has to lie to you before she does it. He looked again at her gentle rise and fall that showed the Minervas as regularly and attractively as though she were trying to sell them as a choice location. Want to get me a sandwich? He asked Ara. Corned beef and raw onion, or ham and egg and raw onion. After you get breakfast, bring a 4-man watch up here and check all the binoculars. I'm going outside before we go up into Anton.
Yes, Tom.
I wonder what I would do without that Ara, Thomas Hudson thought. You had a wonderful sleep, he told himself, and you couldn't feel better. We've got orders, and we are right on their tails and pushing them toward other people. You're following your orders, and look what a beautiful morning you have to follow them in. But things looked too damn good. They moved down the channel, keeping a good lookout, but there was nothing but the calm, early morning sea, with its friendly undulations and the long green line of Romano inland, with the many keys between.
They won't sail very far in this, Henry said.
They won't sail at all, Thomas Hudson said.
Are we going into Anton?
Sure, and work all of that out.
I like Anton, Henry said. There's a good place to lay too if it's calm so they won't eat us up.
Inside they carry you away, Ara said.
A small seaplane showed ahead, flying low and coming toward them. It was white and minute with the sun on it.
Plane, Thomas Hudson said. Pass the word to get the big flag out.
The plane came on until it buzzed them. Then it circled them twice and went off flying on down to the eastward.
He wouldn't have it so good if he found one, Henry said. They'd shoot him down.
He could send the location and Cayo Frances would pick it up.
Maybe, Ara said.
The two other Basques said nothing. They stood back to back and searched their quadrants. After a while, the Basque they called George, because his name was Eugenio, and Peters could not always say Eugenio, said,
"Plane's coming back to the eastward between the Outer Keys and Romano."
"He's going home to breakfast," Ara said.
"He'll report us," Thomas Hudson said, "so in a month, maybe everybody will know where we were at this time today."
"If he doesn't get the location mixed up on his chart," Ara said.
"But I don't grande, Tom, bearing approximately 20 degrees off the port bow."
"You got good eyes," Thomas Hudson said. "That's her, all right. I better take her in and find the channel into Anton."
"Then port 90 degrees, and I think you'll have her."
"I'll hit the bank anyway, and we can run along it until we find that damn canal." They came in toward the line of green keys that showed like black hedges sticking up from the water, and then acquired shape and greenness, and finally sandy beaches. Thomas Hudson came in with reluctance from the open channel, the promising sea, and the beauty of the morning on deep water, to the business of searching the inner keys. But the plane, working the coast in this direction, turning to run over it with the sun behind it, should mean no one had picked the boats up to the eastward. It could be only a routine patrol, too. But it was logical that it should mean the other. A routine patrol would have been out over the channel both ways. He saw Anton, which was well wooded and a pleasant island, growing before him, and he watched ahead for his marks while he worked in toward the bank. He must take the highest tree on the head of the island and fit it squarely into the little saddle on Romano. On that bearing, he could come in even if the sun were in his eyes and the water had the glare of a burning glass. Today he did not need it, but he did it for practice, and when he found his tree, thinking, "I should have something more permanent for a bearing on a hurricane coast," he eased along the bank until he fitted the tree carefully into the slot of the saddle, then turned sharp in. He was in the canal between marly banks that were barely covered with water, and he said to Ara, "Ask Antonio to put a feather out. We might pick up something to eat. This channel has a wonderful bar on the bottom." Then he steered straight in on his bearing. He was tempted not to look at the banks, but to push it straight through. But then he knew that was one of the things of too much pride Ara had spoken of, and he piloted carefully on the starboard bank and made his turn to starboard when it came by the banks and not by the second bearing that he had. It was like running in the regular streets of a new subdivision and the tide was racing in. It came in brown at first, then pure and clean. Just before he came into the part that he thought of as the turning basin where he planned to anchor, he heard Willie shout, "Fish, fish!" Looking astern, he saw a tarpon shaking himself high in the sun. His mouth was open, and he was huge, and the sun shone on his silvered scales and on the long green whip of his dorsal fin. He shook himself desperately in the sun and came down in a splash of water.
"Sabalo!" Antonio called up disgustedly. "Worthless sabalo," the Basques said.
"Can I play him, Tom?" Henry asked. "I'd like to catch him, even if he is no good to eat."
"Take him from Antonio if Willie hasn't got him. Tell Antonio to get the hell forward. I'm going to anchor." The excitement and the leaping of the big tarpon continued astern, with no one paying attention to it except to grin while they anchored. "Do you want to put out another?" Thomas Hudson called forward. His mate shook his head. When they swung well to the anchor, his mate came up on the bridge.
"She'll hold in anything, Tom," he said. "Any kind of squall, anything. And it doesn't make any difference how she swings. We can't have any motion."
"What time will we get the squalls?"
"After 2,
his mate said, looking at the sky. "Get the dinghy over," Thomas Hudson said. "And give me an extra can of gas with the outboard. We have to get the hell going."
"Who is going with you?"
"Just Ada and Willie and I. I wanted to travel fast." Chapter 10. In the dinghy, the three of them had their raincoats wrapped around the Niños. These were the Thompson submachine guns in their full-length sheep-wool cases. The cases were cut and sewn by Ara, who was not a tailor, and Thomas Hudson had impregnated the clipped wool on the inside with a protective oil which had a faintly carbolic smell. It was because the guns nestled in their sheep-lined cradles, and because the cradles swung when they were strapped open inside the branch of the flying bridge, that the Basques had nicknamed them Little Children. "Give us a bottle of water," Thomas Hudson said to his mate. When Antonio brought it, heavy and cold with the wide screw on top, he passed it to Willie, who stowed it forward. Ada loved to steer the outboard, and he was in the stern. Thomas Hudson was in the center, and Willie crouched in the bow. Ada headed her straight in for the quay, and Thomas Hudson watched the clouds piling up over the land. As they came into the shallow water, Thomas Hudson could see the grayish humps of conches bulging from the sand. Ada leaned forward to say,
"Do you want to look at the beach, Tom?"
"Maybe we'd better before the rain." Ada ran the dinghy ashore, tilting his motor up just at the last rush. The tide had undercut the sand to make a little channel at the point, and he drove the boat in, slanting her up onto the sand.
"Home again," Willie said. "What's this bitch's name?"
"Anton."
"Not Anton Grande or Anton Chico or Anton El Cabron?"
"Just Anton. You take it up to that point, to the eastward, and then keep going. We'll pick you up. I'll work along this beach fast, and Otto will leave the dinghy down somewhere past the next point and work on ahead. I'll pick him up in the dinghy, and we'll come back around for you." Willie had his Nino wrapped in his raincoat and put it on his shoulder.
"If I find any crows, can I kill them?"
"The colonel said all but one," Thomas Hudson said. "Try to save a smart one."
"I'll give them all IQ tests before I open up."
"Give yourself one."
"Mine's goddamn low, or I wouldn't be here,"
Willie said, and he set out. He walked contemptuously, and he watched the beach and the country ahead as carefully as a man could watch. Thomas Hudson told Ada in Spanish what they were going to do, and then shoved the dinghy off. He started down the beach with his Nino under his arm, and he felt the sand between his bare toes. Ahead, the dinghy was rounding the small point. He was glad that he had come ashore, and he walked as fast as he could go and still checked the beach. It was a pleasant beach, and he had no forebodings about it as he had had earlier in the day on the sea. It was spooky this morning, he thought. Maybe it was just the calm. Ahead, he could see the clouds still building up. But nothing had started to come out. There were no sandflies now in the hot sun and no mosquitoes, and ahead of him he saw a tall white heron standing looking down in the shallow water with his head, neck, and beak poised. He had not flown when Ada passed with the dinghy. "We have to search it carefully, even though I do not believe there is anything here," he thought. "They are becalmed today, so we lose nothing, and it would be criminal to overrun them. Why don't I know more about them?" he thought. "It is my own fault. I should have gone in and looked at the hut they built and at the tracks. I questioned Willie and Ada, and they are both truly good, but I should have gone in myself. It is the repugnance that I feel toward meeting them," he thought. "It is my duty, and I want to get them, and I will, but I have a sort of fellow death house feeling about them. Do people who are in the death house hate each other? I don't believe they do, unless they are insane." Just then the heron rose and flew further up the beach, breaking widely with his great white wings, and then taking a few awkward steps he landed. "I'm sorry I disturbed him," Thomas Hudson thought. He checked all of the beach above high tide, but there were no tracks except where one turtle had crawled twice. She had made a wide track to the sea and back, and a wallowing depression where she had laid. "I haven't time to dig for the eggs," he thought. The clouds were beginning to darken and to move out. If they had been on this side of the quay, they certainly would have dug for them. He looked ahead, but he could not see the dinghy, because there was another curving point. He walked along just where the sand was firm from the dampness of the high tide, and he saw the hermit crabs carrying their shells and the ghost crabs that slipped across the stretch of sand and into the water. To his right, in the shallow channel, he saw the grayness that a school of mullet made and their shadow on the sand bottom as they moved. He saw the shadow of a very big barracuda that was stalking the mullet, and then he saw the lines of the fish, long, pale, and gray, and seeming not to move. He walked steadily, and soon he was past the fish and was coming up on the heron again. "I'll see if I can pass him without making him fly," he thought. But just when he was coming, almost even with the heron, the school of mullet burst from the water, jumping stiffly, big-eyed and blunt-headed, silvery in the sun, but not beautiful. Thomas Hudson turned to watch them and to try to see the barracuda who was cutting into them. He could not see the predatory fish, only the wild leaping of the frightened mullet. Then he saw that the school was reformed into a gray, moving mass, and when he turned his head, the heron was gone. He saw him flying with his white wings over the green water, and ahead was the yellow sand beach and the line of trees along the point. The clouds were beginning to darken behind Romano, and he walked faster to round the point and see where Ada had left the dinghy. Walking faster gave him an erection, and he thought, there can't be any krauts around. That wouldn't happen if there were any krauts around. I don't know, he thought. It could happen if you were wrong enough and didn't know it. At the end of the point, there was a patch of bright white sand, and he thought, I'd like to lie down here. This would be a good place. Then he saw the dinghy at the end of the long beach, and he thought, the hell with it. I'll sleep tonight, and I will love the air mattress or the deck. I might as well love the deck. We've been around together long enough to get married. There is probably a lot of talk about you and the flying bridge now, he thought. You ought to do right by her. And all you do is step on her and stand on her. What sort of way is that to act? And spill cold tea on her, too. That's not nice. What are you saving her for, anyway? To die on her? She would certainly appreciate that. Walk on her, stand on her, and die on her. Treat her really nice. One thing practical you can do now is cut out this crap and get this beach checked and pick up Ada. He walked on down the beach, and he tried not to think at all, but only to notice things. He knew his duty very well, and he had tried never to shirk it. But today, he had come ashore when someone else could have done it just as well, but when he had stayed aboard and they found nothing, he felt guilty. He watched everything, but he could not keep from thinking. Maybe Willie's side is hotter, he thought. Maybe Ada will have hit something. I know damn well this is where I would have come if I were they. It's the first good place. They might have passed it and gone straight on, or they might have turned in between Paradon and Cruz. But I don't believe they would, because somebody would see them from the light, and they never could get in and through there at night, guide or no guide. I think they will have gone further down. Maybe we will find them down by Coco. Maybe we'll find them right in behind here. There's another key that we ought to work out. I must remember that they are always working on the chart, that is, unless they picked up a fisherman here. I haven't seen any smoke from anybody burning charcoal. Well, I'm glad we will get this key worked out before the rain. I love doing it, he thought. I just don't like the end. He shoved off the dinghy and stepped into her, washing the sand off his feet as he got in. He stowed the Niño in its rubber coat where he could reach it and started the motor. He had no love for the outboard, as Ada had, and he never started it without remembering blowing out and sucking out clogged fuel lines and remembering shorted plugs and other delights of the small motor. But Ada never had ignition trouble. When the motor misfunctioned, he regarded it as a chess player might admire a brilliant move on the part of his opponent. Thomas Hudson steered along the beach, but Ada was far ahead, and he could not see him. He must be halfway to Willie, he thought. But when he saw him, he was nearly to the mangrove bay where the sand stopped, and the mangroves grew heavy and green into the water, their roots showing like tangled brown sticks. Then he noticed the mast, sticking up out of the mangroves. It was all he could see, but he could see Ada was lying behind a small sand dune so that he could just see over the top. He could feel his scalp prickle as it does when you meet a car coming fast suddenly on the wrong side of the road. But Ada heard the motor and turned his head and waved him in. Thomas came in on a tangent behind Ada. The Basque came aboard carrying his raincoated Niño barrel first over the right shoulder of his old striped beach shirt. He looked pleased.
Get as far out as the channel will let you, he said. We'll find Willie.
Is it one of the boats?
Sure, Ada said. But I'm sure it's abandoned. It's going to rain, Tom.
Did you see anything?
Nothing.
Me either.
It's a nice key. I found an old trail to water, but it wasn't used.
There's water on Willie's side, too.
There's Willie, Ada said.
He was sitting on the sand. His legs were drawn up, and his Niño was in his lap. Thomas Hudson ran the dinghy into him. Willie looked at them, his black hair down over his forehead and wet with sweat, and his good eye blue and mean.
Where you two fuck-offs been?
He asked. When were they here, Willie?
Yesterday by the thirds, Willie said.
Or should I say, their excrement.
How many?
Eight,
that could excrete in three of these with the bubble sheets.
What else?
They got a guide or a pilot or whatever his rating is.
The guide they had picked up was a fisherman who had a palm-thatched shelter and had been salting barracuda strips on a rack to sell them later to the Chinese, who bought fish for the Chinese retail grocers who would sell the dried fish in their shops as codfish. The fisherman had salted and dried a good quantity of fish by the looks of the rack.
Kraus see them plenty codfish now on in, Willie said.
What language is that?
My own, Willie said. Everybody has a private language around here, like Basque or something. You got an objection if I speak mine?
Tell me the rest.
Sleep 'em here, one smoke, Willie said. Eat 'em pig meat, all 'em same from Massacre Key. Crown master, no got 'em tin goods or save 'em.
Cut out the shit and tell it straight.
Old Massa Hudson gonna lose all afternoon anyway, do huge rainfall accompanies, squall winds, all along same. Might as well listen alongside Willie all same famous scout of Pampas. Willie tell his own way.
Cut it out.
Listen, Tom, who found Krauts twice?
What about the boat?
Boat's all same finish. She alongside too many rotten planks, one drop out by stern.
They hit something coming in with a bad light.
I guess so. Well, I'll cut out this shit. They've gone on in the westward sun. 8 men and a guide. Maybe 9 if the captain couldn't shit on account of his great responsibilities, like our own leader himself has trouble sometimes and now it's starting to rain. The boat they left was stunk up and beshot with pigs and chickens, and that comrade we buried. There's one other guy is wounded, but it doesn't look bad from the dressing.
Pussy?
Yeah, but clean pus. You want to see it all, you'll take my word for it.
I take your word on all of it. But I want to see it. He saw everything, the tracks, the fire, where they had slept and cooked, the dressing, the part of the brush they had used as a latrine, and the groove the turtle boat had made in the sand when they beached her. It was raining hard now, and the first gusts of the squall were coming.
Put on the coats and put the niños under them,
Ada said.
I have to take them down tonight anyway.
I'll help you, Willie said. We're breathing down their necks, Tom.
There's an awful lot of country, and they have someone with local knowledge now.
You just keep thinking the way you are, Willie said. What local knowledge has he got that we haven't got?
Certainly he'll have plenty.
To hell with him! I'm going to wash on the stern with soap. Jesus, I want to feel that fresh water and soap.
It was raining so hard now that it was hard to see the ship as they came around the point. The squall had moved out toward the ocean, and it was so violent and the rain so heavy that trying to see the ship was like looking at an object from behind a falls. Her tanks will fill like nothing with this, Thomas Hudson thought. She'll probably be running off through the galley faucets and in the head right now.
How many days since it's rained, Tom?
Willie asked. We'll have to check with the log. It's something over 50.
It's like the goddamn monsoon breaking,
Willie said.
Give me a gourd so I can bail.
Keep the cover on your Nino dry.
Her butt is in my crotch and her nose is under the left shoulder of my coat, Willie said. She never had it better in her life. Give me the gourd.
On the stern, they were all bathing naked. They soaped themselves and stood on one foot and another, bending against the lashing of the rain as they soaped and then leaning back into it. They were really all brown, but they looked white in this strange light. Thomas Hudson thought of the canvas of the bathers by Cézanne, and then he thought he would like to have Aikens paint it. Then he thought that he should be painting it himself with the ship against the roaring white of the surf that came through the driving gray outside with the black of the new squall coming out and the sun breaking through momentarily to make the driving rain silver and to shine on the bathers in the stern. He brought the dinghy up and Ada tossed a line and they were home.
This ends Disc 10.